This is Stefan Lange, Executive Director of Swine from Boehringer Ingelheim in the U.S.
Great, Stefan. Excellent program. Carolina Beach, just like last year, different program, different topics, very up-to-date, very timely. Give us, if you would, because I think I saw you making notes today, give us your short version of here's what went on, here's what was talked about, and here were some of the ideas presented.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you that you liked the program. I agree, we put together a really nice program, and I guess the essence of it was really to take a look at where the swine industry, even in dire times, can, you know, find efficiencies even when profitability is low. And we had a program that was centered around PRRS on the one hand being the most important disease in the pig industry again, and on the other hand, economics of pig production and how we can find efficiencies, really.
Very good. Very good. So let's go through what happened. What did we talk about?
Sure. As a first speaker, we had Dr. Dale Poulsen from Boehringer, who set us off by quoting the Stockdale paradox, which, not surprising that Dale would say that, given that his name is even in Stockdale, but the paradox really being, always confront the brutal facts, but never give up. And that could be actually kind of the motto of the day as well. We looked at the brutal facts, but we also looked for solutions. So Dale Poulsen, for example, talked about PRRS and area control and how we can really make progress in PRRS. And as a conclusion for him, he had some sentences that really stuck to my mind. One being, and I would call it Dale's golden rule, well, do upon your neighbor as you want him to do upon you. And he reflected on PRRS and how one farm could infect the neighbor's farm and how you could control PRRS on your farm, but if the neighbor didn't do it, you probably wouldn't get quite far. So while that was Dale's golden rule, at the same time, he didn't really offer us a silver bullet for PRRS. What he did, though, is talk about a toolbox that we have developed and that has grown more and more over the last several years to make progress in PRRS. So Dale talked about risk assessment as one tool in the toolbox. He talked about vaccine usage as one tool in the toolbox, but he also talked about the area control approach to PRRS that could really serve as a game changer in how we talk about PRRS and how we control PRRS, going out of this, just thinking about my flow, my farm, but really thinking about an area.
Great, great overview, and you're right, Dale did a nice presentation on we've got an option here. We've got the opportunity to make a difference in PRRS, and regional control is one of the ways that we can move forward with that. Who is next?
Well, next was Dr. Scott D., who all of the listeners, I guess, know. He has been working for the last several years in PRRS, and he kept filling the toolbox that Dale talked about. Started us off by saying that he really thinks we have made huge strides forward in terms of what we can do about PRRS. And he talked about the latest news in filtration, advances, how he has run through different trials with different types of filters. And he presented data from a trial that has been going on now for 952 days. That's 952 days. And it's going on for another 259 days, so an extremely long-term trial that showed that filters can be a very valuable tool of keeping farms negative. He also talked about a trial where he could show that PRRS can actually spread through the air up to 3 miles, which really again ties nicely into this area control thinking. So if PRRS flies for at least 3 miles, well, this is the neighborhood you got to think about when you think about PRRS control. Mm-hmm. It's not just your farm, it's at least 3 miles out. And one of his conclusions was, we got the toolbox, we got a greatly grown knowledge, and we really got to change our game, we got to play offense now when it comes to PRRS control.
One of the things that I really appreciated about Scott's presentation was questions that came up afterwards related to being able to move in and out of those facilities, and his comment being, you know, when we have a filtered barn, it's like an airlock when we have to go in and out of there. And initially, the idea of, okay, I'm going into this room, I'm going to be isolated for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever that period of time is, in order to get that bad air out and then go into the clean area. Initially, for producers, they think, well, I can't do that. And yet, they may not be putting it in the perspective, the economic perspective, which makes it make sense. In fact, one of our speakers in the afternoon got into that a little more in depth.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, and I actually had the opportunity to visit the very farm that he was talking about, and it's just amazing how even the mindset of the whole team on the farm changes, mm-hmm. how they become a lot more aware of biosecurity, but also in a farm where person is under control, how it changes the attitude and it gives so much more positive energy to the labor. Mm-hmm. And that was something that the next speaker actually set us off with, saying PERS can be devastating for the morale on a farm, and by getting it under control, having much better motivated workers, you can impact your production in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. And you had Jim down from Iowa State?
Right. So we had Jim Klevenstein.
Yeah.
Jim Klevenstein as the next speaker, and he switched gears a little bit and talked a bit more about economics in pig production as such, and then in economics on prevention versus treatment, and walking through a specific example, in this case PERS again. But he set us off thinking when he said disease status these days really becomes a trade issue. Mm-hmm. So you don't really have to go as far as to talk about classical swine fever, which fortunately we don't have here, but I mean, look at H1N1, how that closed borders and all of a sudden, yeah, it became a trade issue for all the wrong reasons, but that's the way it is these days. Mm-hmm. He also said that disease management may actually be the key to survival and turn into a competitive advantage. So if you think about the U.S. already being cost leader in pig production, if only we could even better control diseases, that would further build our competitive edge versus other producers in the rest of the world. And when you talk about that, you can't ignore the fact that PERS really is the most expensive disease that's out there. And based on, I mean, after the presentation, I think based on conservative estimates, the cost of PERS is at least $700 million a year, with the vast bulk of that really being in the nursery and grow finish phase. And Jim talked us through the economic benefits of preventing PERS on an example where he took 10 farms and walked through the devastating effects of PERS, coming back to the point where he said, well, this is something where prevention clearly is the way to go. And even in a situation that we are in right now, where you lose a lot of money, where the industry loses money with every pig they produce, by controlling PERS, you would lose less money. And even in this environment, that is a good decision.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely, because it falls right to the bottom line. But his update on some of the numbers that we've heard related to the cost of PERS, adding literally several hundred million dollars more just because of the changes in the economics in the last 2 years. Before, the numbers I'd heard were half a billion, and now we're up to $700 million a year that this disease has cost us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why I'm even saying it's conservative numbers. With the increased feed costs and with an increased prevalence, actually, of PERS in the herds, I wouldn't be surprised if the next time this calculation comes up, we're all of a sudden talking about a billion a year. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's just mind-blowing.
Yes. The next couple of guys on the presentation list took us a little bit away from that idea of prevention, perhaps, and more into how do we make sure, how do we test regularly? Are there ways that we can track what's happening in our barn? And I thought both of their presentations, they work together, so it's not surprising that they fit together well. But I really appreciated we had one gentleman who spoke to, look, here are some things that you need to know about how to do this. And then the second speaker came in and really laid it out in a very graphical format that I think there were maybe some mouths that dropped open as they realized the value that they could gain from this testing method.
Yeah, we had Dr. Jeff Zimmerman and his graduate students, John Prickett, both talking about rope testing. So John Prickett set us off showing how you actually do the rope testing in pigs, how you really simply take a cotton rope, hang it into a pen, and have the pigs chew on it, and how you can very easily get really good sample material that you then can use for ELISA testing, for PCR testing, something that will be incredibly valuable, and that's where Jeff led us to, incredibly valuable if you need mass screening, mass testing to have in-process monitoring of disease status and regular testing. And with this rope technology, we now have a way of taking a fairly inexpensive, not very labor-intensive, and also animal welfare-oriented way of collecting samples, which will be invaluable, especially when you talk about larger-scale projects, and that where it really ties back into PERS. So let's just say we did a PERS area control. You would have to measure, even before you start doing something, and you would have to measure while you do it. That'll take a lot of regular sampling, and with that technology, we got an easy way to get that done.
As we saw the graphical interface that Jeff Zimmerman exhibited for us, where we could literally track the activity of these diseases through barns, through a series of barns, and then you think about, okay, well, I see in this barn we've had success combating these diseases because graphically you can see what's happened, and so now whatever protocol has been used in that barn, that's the one that I want to mimic across my production schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think by getting more and more flows monitored like that, we will learn greatly and come to a certain standardization of programs. Now, obviously, systems are different, virulence of pathogens are different, and it will not be a one-size-fits-all, but a lot more standardized. And again, in an area approach, having some kind of standardization, if you think back to pseudorabies or jet ski eradication, mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. need some kind of standardization to make things work, and that'll help us really get there.
Absolutely, absolutely. So wrap up the day for us. Who was last?
Well, last was Dennis DiPietri, and those who have heard him know that he will inspire an audience within the first sentence, pretty much. And so Dennis set us off by saying, well, we are a bit worried right now with the status of the pig industry, but really, if you look at it from a global perspective, population is growing, there will be an ongoing growing need of agricultural resources. So really, the U.S. is set up nicely because we have cost leadership here, we have the resources available to have a good future, even though right now it looks a bit dire for the time being. Then he talked about a term that he called precision agriculture, and he looked at the grain production where they already use this precision agriculture and said, well, what we really need is not just output measurement of when we produce pigs, but a better hand on in-process monitoring so that we know our pigs are growing well while they grow well so that we can intervene really early in the process. And really that ties in nicely into the rope technology again, mm-hmm. where now you have a way of regularly monitoring disease status as opposed to on very few occasions. The other big thought process that Dennis then started is that he said, well, the path for pig production to increase profit these days is really through decreasing the variance variability in the pigs. Because that's where you lose money if you send a very non-uniform group of pigs to market while you get dinged on the too heavy and the too light pigs. That's where you lose the money. And again, back a tie to PERS, where non-uniformity is a classic sign of PERS, as Jeff Zimmerman put it. So by reducing variation, you can maximize your profit. Means, though, that you got to measure during your production process. And it also means that you got to really focus on disease control, because diseases are really the number one cause for variation.
Dennis's very practical tip that he gave today, I think it's a great one that producers may not think about, but it's the idea of that individual who is selecting the pigs to go onto the truck, just by telling them how they did last time, how that load landed at the packer, and how many were outside the range, how many were inside the range. That tends to make that selection individual want to beat his last load. So you had 20 that fell outside the primary range, so this time he'd like it to be 17. But before, we may not have told them that. Before, we may have said, you know, he didn't do a very good job on that load. So by not giving them a number to shoot at or a benchmark to work from, that's an easy thing to change that can be put into practice immediately and begin to make changes in your operation.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the same token, you also suggested for larger systems, if you can afford it, take a look at who can select the picks best in your system and make this person actually a specialist who does nothing but that, because there's so much to gain from having the right selection of picks when you ship them off.
Yeah. Well, excellent program here in Carolina Beach. Thank you for letting us come down and view that. And along those lines, the producers who weren't able to be in Carolina Beach will have access to these programs on Swinecast. It'll be the PowerPoint presentations, the speakers, the video in its entirety. So they'll have a chance to catch up with what it is that you and I have been talking about if they'd like to listen to the whole program. So again, great job, nice job. Thanks, BI, and thank you, Stefan, for what you've done here today. I appreciate it.
You're most welcome, and thank you for coming here.